Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Due diligence on Classic Business is brought to you by Deal Leaders International, leaders in mergers and acquisitions. Well, last time we spoke with Andrew Bowman from Deal Leaders International, we explored the importance of exit readiness, how the best deals certainly don't start at the finish line, but years before a business actually goes to market. Today, we're picking up that thread and we're pulling it through the world of private equity, because if there's one group that really should, on paper, have exits down to an art form, it's private equity. And yet, time and again, we do see deals stalling, we see founder tensions flaring, and value quietly leak out before the exit bell ever rings. So why are even the professionals getting it wrong? I'm joined now again by Andrew. Welcome back. Andrew, let's just start with the obvious question here. Private equity firms make their living on exits. It's literally in their DNA. So why do so many still struggle to prepare properly for them?
Hi, Michael. Yeah, look, I think it's a combination of factors. I think probably first and foremost is probably capacity and bandwidth. I think, you know, again, it depends, you know, whether it's a relatively new fund or an established fund, because I think as new funds, you're working on making the initial investments work really well. So it's about getting the returns and growing those businesses and adding value. And for the established funds, you're obviously focusing on the acquisitions, but then you've got a whole lot of existing investments that need to run. And it's a combination of the day-to-day noise and, you know, needing to get the returns you require, managing shareholder relationships, and, you know, just that, I suppose, that hamster wheel of noise. And, you know, often it just doesn't create the opportunity to take a step back and or have a, you know, a seat under the willow tree and assess what does the exit strategy look like before it's too late.
Yeah, so I mean, from what I'm hearing, it certainly isn't a lack of intent. It's very much a resource and bandwidth issue. And you've mentioned before that private equity teams are often lean. You know, you've got a couple of GPs, you're all invested in your own funds, the analysts are crunching the numbers, the deal makers chasing the IRR and the new deal pipeline. And I think very few have the bandwidth to think strategically about the storytelling and the governance or the ESG. How much of that gap is structural rather than cultural that you think needs to shift in the industry?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I definitely think it's structural. I think from a private equity firm perspective, the teams that operate in, they've got to be multi-skilled, but you run the risk of, you know, almost being a mile wide and an inch deep versus creating verticals of expertise. Now, often there's expertise in industry, you know, in certain of the funds, but it's around, are there exit experts? And I think, you know, it doesn't warrant necessarily having, you know, full-time resources on board, but resources. But I think it is, you know, from your perspective that you mentioned as well, that, you know, that cultural element is also important, because I was just looking at the Savca report came out, or the survey, and they were just obviously showing how much lower in the current year the capital raises have been versus previous years. And I think that's obviously, you know, telling of the lack of exits. Although they've picked up, there's still not enough there. So, you know, again, that's another hat that the teams are having to focus on, because if you can't offload assets, you can't free up dry powder. You've got to go and try and find more. So, you know, there's got to be equal effort, you know, based on the acquisition, the growth and the exit, as well as focus to get the formula right.
And I think that structural issue gets worse near the end of the fund's life cycle, because the clock's ticking. Half the partners are already eyeing the next raise. And so that bandwidth just thins out even further. Let's just talk about, you know, what's happening inside the tent, that founder PE relationship. I mean, often it can be complicated. What are you seeing in the market when it comes to managing those relationships near exit?
Yeah, you know, it's quite interesting, because I think the initial honeymoon period's often good, because I think from an investor perspective, the private equity teams can bring in new skills, initial bandwidth, bit of corporatization and governance and the likes. And then it's down to business. And, you know, it's quite interesting, because there's still, in many cases we've seen now, there's still two camps almost versus a single camp. So as you start nearing what could and should be in an exit timeline, you know, has that dynamic been managed? So is there a clear exit objective that everybody's working towards, or are there two agendas? And I think often that human dynamic is underestimated, because, again, it's taken up with operational noise and sometimes different timelines, because I think, you know, we all know that there's a finite investment period for private equity firms. They're going to have to exit. And from management, what does that mean? You know, so if there's alignment, so there's a joint exit, or is it just replacement partner? And I think that's often, you know, very, very difficult. And especially from a private equity perspective, we're looking at an opportunity now where from the time the investment took place to now exploring the exit, the business has remained flat. So private equity as the investor, you've got to grow that business, you know, one, to hopefully get a bigger base on which to apply a better multiple to. But if it stayed stagnant because it's meeting management's requirements and they're quite happy with the dividend flow and not taking on more risk, how does that get managed? Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a very, very tough dynamic, but I think it is an area that we're seeing more and more, almost the qualitative components and the relationship components and the psychological components are becoming almost more important than the financial metrics alone.
You talk about that relationship, I suppose, like marriage counseling for capitalists. You've got one partner wanting to redecorate, the other just wants to sell the house. So where does DLI Advisory now fit into that dynamic? How do you step into that space between the emotionally invested founder who might want to take a little less risk and the deal-driven private equity partner, as you say, who might be wanting to take on additional risk to ensure they can get the best return at exit?
Look, I think the key is to get in early enough. You know, and we always say, so if you're looking at a five-year cycle, you almost want to start exploring the exit about when there's 2 to 3 years to go. And often within that relationship, it's still early enough where there's, I'm going to say in inverted commas, an excitement and sexiness to the relationship. So you can start building on that versus, you know, old habits kicking in and losing momentum. I think the starting point linked to that is also to get reality on the table, because I think you know, often they've had enough exposure to each other to really suss each other out. And in many cases, is it a case of there's an elephant in the room that's not being addressed? And are both parties waiting to see what it sorts itself out over time? So I think it definitely starts with a qualitative assessment as well as where to from here. Because I think the biggest challenge that, you know, all of these investments or investors have is they can't preempt who they're going to sell to in 3 years' time. So from both parties' perspective, whatever decisions you make today is going to impact who you're going to sell it to in the future. Mm-hmm. So that's where we would step in. So one, align the camps, kind of get it all out on the table, get reality on the table and deal with the actual issues. And then you've got to create a hymn sheet that everybody buys into. But then you've got to map it out and execute according to that blueprint. You can't just put together a strategy that sounds great and then relook at it in a year's time, because it is one of those things where, you know, you've got to stay very close and you've got to keep measuring. Because we always see it, even in a traditional deal, all the real issues come out right at the end. So when it gets time to do a collective exit, now all of a sudden the stuff that's been brushed up under the carpet pops up and it gets messy and elements that could have been planned for, avoided, you know, better preparation, better focus and better alignment. So, it's not easy, but I think often being a third party in the mix allows both parties to be a little bit more transparent and honest and say things without necessarily damaging the relationship up front.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point about having a neutral third-party advisor, because that can actually diffuse some of the relational tension as well, which we certainly can't discount. You've said there are growing risks for unprepared exits. What's changed in the environment that makes that so much more dangerous now than even a few years ago?
I think the biggest challenge is you've got to be able to quantify and prove the future growth trajectory. You know, I think the scrutiny that takes place at both, commercial, financial, you know, tax, compliance, regulatory, and all of those elements from a due diligence perspective is kind of reinforcing the status quo. But you've now got to get somebody to really buy into the future. And I think that's often the case. It's really interesting to see how it flips, because we sell our clients to private equity. So that's on one side of the table. Now, when we work with private equity on the other side of the table, it's so interesting how the hat flips back to almost the business owner mentality. So there's all those elements of alignment that need to take place and you know, valuation expectation and joining the dots, because gone are the days where you can sell faith almost, or we hope it's going to go, you know, over synergistic elements. Because the first question and the challenge that a private equity seller has is the buyer coming is, why didn't you leverage that? How come the growth has been pedestrian? If it was so great, why didn't you capitalize on that? So there's all of those elements where, you know, you're not dealing with unsophisticated business owner who has just grown a great business, but they haven't run it according to yields and returns and hurdle rates and all, you know, capital optimization. Now you've got professionals and experts in that space being questioned by the market, you know, with a very different level of scrutiny and expectation. So it's a whole new and different repackage that you've got to be prepared for, because it's very, very different to the first round.
Well, I think if there's one lesson from all of this, it's that even the smartest investors can't outsource readiness, and private equity may know how to buy and build, but it's in the selling and the story behind the sell that separates, I think, the good exits from the great ones. And if you want to hear more, Andrew Bowman, CEO of Corporate and Advisory at Deal Leaders International, along with the DLI team, will be unpacking this at their advisory launch breakfast on the 23rd of October in Johannesburg. I'll be joined by a really gritty and experienced panel with you, Andrew, where we're going to be going through all of this, warts and all. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks very much, Michael.
Due Diligence on Classic Business is brought to you by Deal Leaders, partnering with you. For the next episode of Due Diligence, listen to Classic Business next Tuesday around 20 to 7, brought to you by Deal Leaders International.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.